the buzzer may burn on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do. For the
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
And welcome to the world's greatest podcast, Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Chris Cotter here, and no Seth Greenberg today. Doc, he's traveling and battling it with it. I know you were battling with it yesterday coming from Wisconsin to Chicago. A lot of folks in the Midwest and in the Northeast dealing with traffic, but you get Chris Cotter and Dan Dockage today. How you doing, Doc?
I'm doing good, but I got to ask you a question.
Shoot.
This is what we do on this podcast. I just got to ask you a question. You're a Georgia Tech guy. Crean beats you guys out for recruit. Are you okay?
Oh, no. I'm not okay with it. Here's the deal. Here's the situation with Georgia Tech, folks. And a lot of people are this way when you're a basketball school or a football school and you're maybe the little brother in the state. Georgia's the big brother in the state, the bigger school, the largest of the state schools. Georgia's a football school. They'll always admit that. And when Georgia beats Georgia Tech in football, that's fine. Tech needs to be competitive and needs to beat them every now and then. But Tech fans understand that Georgia is the top dog, literally and figuratively, from a football perspective, so they expect that. Now, when there's a top basketball recruit coming out of Atlanta or even the entire state of Georgia, Georgia Tech fans expect to get that kid. And it's nothing against Tom Crean and what he's doing and what he's building in Athens, but Georgia's a football school. Tech has more of a history recently in basketball, and certainly back in the days of Bobby Kremins, Tech was getting the recruits. Tech was getting the top recruits, not only in the state, but in the entire country when you talk about the Kenny Andersons and the Dennis Scotts of the world coming to Georgia Tech. So that's when you look at it and you say, something's not right here. That's when you look at it and you say, this is one of those things that isn't right in the world. If Georgia gets the number one football recruit, so be it. That's the way it should be in the state of Georgia. Not so for basketball. So that doesn't really sit well with Tech.
What happens, or has it happened? Did Calvin Johnson choose Georgia Tech over Georgia? Yeah. Has Georgia Tech beaten Georgia for a great, not a good one, not a guy, but a really good football player?
It's Calvin Johnson is the one that Georgia Tech beat everybody out on because everybody wanted him, including Georgia. But by and large, no, they lose those guys. They lose them to Georgia and they lose them to Florida State, Tennessee, Clemson, Auburn, Alabama. They don't usually compete with many of the football players. But basketball, they haven't recently, and that's the biggest problem because they should be. They should be winning those battles. Heck, Pearl comes in to Atlanta and beats Georgia Tech on recruits all the time. It's happened over the last few years since he's gone to Auburn.
Josh Pastner, do not listen to this podcast because one of your famous alums, the Jane Pauley, for you people that listen to us because of Indiana, you know, my Indiana ties, has just said there's something not right with the state of basketball at Georgia Tech. But that's also kind of a tell no about the flood moment because we've seen it. They just haven't won enough. But I'm just curious because one day Crean's ripping his team, Chris, and the next day they get the number one player in Anthony Edwards. Yeah. So, I mean, hey, look. Good for Crean. It's an up-and-down world, coach.
No question. And I like Josh Pastner a lot, and I like what he's trying to do at Georgia Tech. But that, I guarantee you, I'm not the first time he's heard it, and I'm sure he feels the same way, too. He's thinking, that's the type of kid we need to get. We need to own Atlanta if we're going to be able to take the next step and move into the top half of the ACC instead of being admired in the second half, which is where they are, and which is where they've been.
Right. That's it.
We got a big show coming up.
I just wanted to get that out of the way before, because I know you got angst.
I'm glad you let me get it off my chest.
Yeah.
We got a big show coming up, though, even though Seth isn't going to be with us. Talking about Duke from last night, not only and really since the last time we spoke, with the big win over Virginia, then the comeback last night. Kentucky and Michigan falling last night, and we're going to talk about how real LSU is and how we think they are. Plus, we're going to take your questions, listener questions, later on in the show, and we're going to make our picks. So first, let's start with Duke, Dan. This is the most maddening. Can you think of a team that is more maddening than this Duke team? Because when they're good, I think Duke and Tennessee, when they're good and they're both playing as well as they can play, they're leaps and bounds better than everybody else. The problem is Duke so often doesn't play as well as they're capable of playing. And last night was a perfect example in the first half of the second half, and then they played as well as they're capable of playing in the second half.
Let's not forget, and sometimes we do because we see the bodies and the personality. These guys are 18, 20, 18 years old. I mean, that's what they are. And, you know, you come off a big win against Virginia. Somebody said it to me, and I think it was probably apropos, Chris. They didn't look like they really wanted to be there in the first half. And let's also be honest. It's another game. You got the red out or whatever the hell they call it, blackout. I don't know what the hell they were doing. But you got all that stuff every night you play. And some nights the other team being jacked up and you kind of come in to play a game. That happens to 18 to 20-year-old kids. But what I liked about it, and again, I think your point is absolutely right, Tennessee, I don't know that they're leaps and bounds. A healthy Gonzaga, which I don't know they're going to be. We'll see. They are better. And I thought in the second half, I thought the one play that we were all sitting around, Dave Fleming, Molly McGrath, my wife, our director, Scott Johnson, and when they're in the middle of their comeback, it's now about, I don't know, six, seven, whatever. R.J. Barrett's busting it down the floor right side. He goes between his legs backwards to Cam Reddish, who drills like a 25-footer. Yeah. And as a coach, I immediately looked to Chris Mack the next time they showed him, and you could just see. Like, if ever somebody wanted time to run out, it was Chris Mack.
Yeah. You know?
And the zone hurt him, but more than anything, Louisville hurt themselves. I mean, they got rushed. Hell, they fell down with the ball. One guy said, to heck with it, I'm tired of them. I'm going to drive through the middle of the defense. He just lost it out of bounds. They lost patience. They lost poise. And Duke, they're so talented. Like, Seth comes on, and let's rip Seth for just a minute, okay?
We got time.
Seth comes on here, and he's always like, I don't know about Cam Reddish. I'm thinking to myself, man, I like Cam Reddish. He's got size, he's got length, he's got confidence, and he can stroke it. So, 27 last night for Zion Williamson. 18-year-olds are going to have those kind of halves, Chris. Duke, Bowling Green, I don't care. They just are. It's part of the fabric of that age, doing what they're trying to do at such a high level every night. So
think about that, the comeback and the way it played itself out. There's the Duke side, and then there's the Louisville side, and we'll get into that a little bit more. But how does a team completely implode like that? And Chris Mack called all his timeouts early, didn't have any timeouts down the stretch because he was just trying to stem the tide. How do you take a team at home with the crowd behind you up 23? You know you aren't as good as Duke, but you played better than they did through 30 minutes. How do you stem that tide if you're a coach? How do you prevent that from getting away from you?
Well, it's almost impossible. But what Chris did, and I've seen a lot of people are critical of him taking his timeouts early, he didn't want to get it. He was doing everything he could to not let it get Chris to the point where it was six, it was eight, it was four, it was five, it was back to three. I mean, he was doing everything so that he didn't have to be in this position later. He was being proactive as opposed to reactive. But to answer your specific question, I've been on both sides of that. I've been on one where we were 24 down against Kent State. They had Antonio Gates, and they were the best team in the league at their place, and we come back and won. I've been on one where we were up 28 at Bowling Green, and we were at the 7-minute mark, 8-minute timeout, and we were the 26th best team. We were the team, first team getting votes at Bowling Green, and playing the worst, maybe the worst team in the country at that time in Buffalo. And next thing you know, it's a 4-point game and you got to make free throws. And I swear to God, both ways, when it's going good for you,
yeah,
it's like a big old freaking bucket that you're throwing shots in. And when it's not going for you, you slip on the floor and you give the ball back. Or a shot that you think is going to kind of end this run goes in and out, pops out. Or something happens where a guy gets a rebound, flips one over his head, and goes. It's just, I swear to God, Chris, because of proximity to the court, because of all the momentum is so massive. And I don't know who the Supreme Court justice was that said it, like, about pornography. I don't know it, but I can't define it, but I know it when
I see
it.
You know when you see it, right.
Yeah, it's the same thing with this, Chris. I can't define it for you, but you know it when you see it. And it's not just a coach, the other players. But what it showed, and I'll, this is a long answer, but what it showed was, all right, in the biggest of moments, and that was the biggest moment that they had, who leads your team? And Cunningham didn't, Wara didn't, nobody did. And that's concerning. Or maybe you learn from it, I don't know. But it's one thing to lead your team when the other team isn't just crushing your soul, but when they're crushing your soul, who's going to step up? And
yeah,
nobody did.
You know,
nobody did.
And sort of a completely different win, but more impressive was really Duke's win over Virginia over the weekend. I mean, to go in the John Paul Jones Arena and Virginia playing as well as they were through the first, really that entire game. You can't really, I don't think you can point to a section of time when Virginia wasn't playing well. It's just Duke was playing so well, and they did exactly what they haven't done all year, Doc, and that's make shots. They were 13 for 21 from beyond the arc. That is so un-Duke-like.
Would you agree that if Duke is going to make 13, not even 13 to 21, let's go another way. Let's say 10 to 21. They'll beat everybody they play?
Everybody. I don't see, and Virginia played well and they lost by 10 on their home court. That's the point, is if Duke comes out and plays well and makes shots, they shot almost 58% from the floor, 13 to 21 from beyond the arc. Reddish, who was the only one who could make shots last night for Duke, had four threes and he had five in that game against Virginia. If he's starting to stroke it, I don't know who beats them. Do you?
If they come
to play every night?
No, because they have the indomitable or whatever, however you say it, force in Zion Williamson. And let's be honest, sometimes I'll say this: when Zion Williamson, I've said this on this podcast, when Zion Williamson was in high school, I had doubts about him because I swear to God, every time I saw them play a high school game or he dunked on somebody in high school, they literally looked like they were playing against kids that were 12 years old and wanted his autograph.
Yeah.
Right? So you're sitting there, Chris, going, all right, does this equate to college basketball? And then obviously it has, but I'll tell you even more so. What's been the most impressive thing for me for Zion Williamson is his personality in big games. I mean, it's not, okay, he hit a three against Virginia. He had 18 points against Virginia on eight shots. It's not necessarily only his personality. It's the numbers that guy puts up in the biggest of situations, 27 last night. I just think because of him, and then obviously what you have around it, but because of him, Chris.
Yeah.
He sort of has a
will to win that belies a freshman. Don't you, most freshmen don't put a team on their back and say, all right, things aren't going well, or we're playing like idiots, or our heads aren't in it. I'm going to put it on myself now to turn my game around, and you guys follow me. That's not something you see from freshmen every year.
A lot of guys would say that. Because I think kids know what to say now, Chris. I think they're schooled on the right words to say. But you got to have an unbelievable ability to do it. Like, you've got to have so much skill and toughness and want to. A coach told me today when I was just talking ball as I was driving from Madison to Chicago, he used the word, man, he has such a spirit for competition. And you see that. I mean, like, they asked him after the game, Zion, what did Coach K say? He said, I don't coach no losers. Yeah. Which is so cool, because coming out of his mouth, it didn't sound mean. It didn't sound angry. It just sounded like real. How do I put this right? I don't know if he's the best player in college that I've seen, but he's certainly the most dominating when you combine personality with performance that I've seen. I'd have to go back. Like, Trae Young wasn't that. Trae Young, by this time of last year, getting kind of tired of.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see more of Zion, Chris.
Right. And he is clutch. And by clutch, I don't think you necessarily all the time mean he's going to have the ball in his hands with 30 seconds left to go in a game when you need to make a big shot. I think there's a lot more to being clutch, and a lot of that is maybe what you say in a huddle. A lot of that is maybe getting a big rebound, getting a big steal when your team needs it. Just kind of the attitude down the stretch.
Chris, there are only certain guys that, particularly as freshmen, that can influence the team. There's only certain guys on every team. Not everybody, you know, everybody has their role. But when I say influence, I mean drag them out of the depths, keep them right. I call it, you know, kind of the Seinfeld guy, where everybody hangs with him. Everybody wants to be with Jerry in Seinfeld. Everybody kind of wants to hang around, you know, Zion Williamson, it looks like, on his team. And that's special, man. That I'm telling you, that's special. Is it the most talent I've ever seen on one team? Yeah, I don't know. We had six first round draft choices at Indiana one year playing against the Fab Five. I think one time I watched the ESPNU game and there was 13 NBA players when you combine both teams. So I don't know about it. Is it the most I've ever seen? But man, since Magic Johnson, I don't know. I'm not seeing anybody that can dominate a game like Zion Williamson can when you include personality.
So Duke is good. We know that. And they can play terribly and still win games on the road against a team like Louisville. What about the Big Ten? Because I know you were at Wisconsin, Michigan State, and this is a, odd conference, too, because just when you think one team's playing great, they start playing terribly, or they have a terrible performance like Michigan last night. And I know Michigan's been struggling a little bit over the last few weeks. It hasn't been as great as it was early in the year. But then just when you think Tom Izzo can't figure anything out, and he's going to really struggle, now he puts a couple of good games together, and suddenly maybe he's righted the ship a little bit.
Chris, Michigan struggles offensively. I saw it in their first loss in the Big Ten at Wisconsin a couple weeks ago. We did the game, and Brzdakis didn't get a bucket. Michigan State, to me, is a function of the team, particularly Ward. Nick Ward had to make a decision. Like, Izzo benched him a week ago. Mm-hmm. And the kid's got to make decisions. You know, he's a guy that, I don't know, he's maybe a first-team All-Big Ten kid, but I swear to God he made the right decision because he started to listen to Izzo. He's running the court, and he's playing to exhaustion. And what I mean by that is you got these four-minute games in a game where from, you know, 16 minutes to 12 minutes you play, and the TV timeout comes, and he's just playing until he's beat, till he's whipped. He's running the floor. And I saw it in the Minnesota game over the weekend. Chris, I'm telling you, I've never seen a big guy like him who is a big guy. Williamson's a big guy, but he's got some dance to him. Nick Ward is just a big, big guy. I've never seen a big guy get in a stance like I saw Nick Ward and fight the post and then run the other end. He could only do it for like 3 minutes at a time, right? And then Izzo, you know, had to get him out. But, Chris, that team learned. Izzo was hard on them. They didn't whine, complain, or fold. And Nick Ward's a great example. And they had a big-time win because Wisconsin was playing all right, had a 7-point lead early, and it was over. So, you know, they lost to Indiana. Bad loss. You mentioned Michigan lost last night. First time
bad
since
loss.
Seven. Bad loss. But I'm telling you, when Penn State walks in the gym, Chris, you're like, these are some dudes. Like, Stevens and Reeves, they got some guys, but, you know, Beilein gets thrown out first time since 79. Just a bad night all around for Michigan. Great night for Penn State. But I got to say this. Penn State, I thought, with their second conference win, like, you got to have a little more respect for your own program. You know, the players got up on a damn
scores table.
You're 2 in a million. Stop it.
So does that tell me that the Big Ten is stronger because the last place team just beat the first place team? Or does this tell me that the Big Ten is not as strong as we had maybe thought they were when Michigan and Michigan State were dominating and Maryland had gotten off to such a good start, that maybe the Big Ten isn't that great? Because the top team out of the Big Ten, are they a 2 seed? Maybe. Are they a 3 seed when the tournament is announced on the 17th? Because right now it's starting to look like we got a bunch of 3 and 4 seeds coming out of the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think it's business as usual in the Big Ten. I mean, I think teams have always, because of the crowds, now Penn State didn't have much of a crowd, but the lower level teams have always played really well. But I will say this, I don't think there's a team in the Big Ten that walks into a gym and the home team doesn't think they're going to beat them. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you can win the game by showing up with your jersey that says Duke, or, you know, like, I remember talking to the guys that played on the undefeated team at Indiana, and they're like, look, by the second year when we were undefeated, we knew, you know, it's worth 15 points just showing up, the aura of our team. There's nobody like that in the Big Ten. It's kind of what I say about Virginia. Like, would you agree with this, Chris? Everybody that plays Virginia, number one, going into the game, thinks they have a chance. And number two, after they lose to Virginia, thinks they should have won the damn game. Because, you know what I mean?
Because Virginia scored 58 points against them, slowed it down to a crawl.
Yeah. And it's like, all right, Nick Guy and Ty Jerome, that's not Reddish, Barrett, and freaking Williamson beating you. You know what I'm saying?
But can you believe, like, how hard that Kyle Guy plays? I mean, watching him last night, you can't help but like the way he plays the game, because you do look at him and you say, this kid shouldn't be doing this against that team or any other team, and yet he does it night in and night out.
Yeah, he does, and that's one of the reasons Tom Crean, as we talked earlier, is at Georgia, because he didn't get Guy like by four different guys, and one of them was Kyle Guy. He went to Virginia out of Indianapolis, so I don't know. It's a fascinating, fascinating deal in the Big Ten. There just isn't the team that is going to walk into any opponent and that opponent doesn't think they're going to win. I don't care if it's Michigan last night. I don't care if it's Michigan State. Minnesota walked in to Michigan State, thought they had a hell of a chance, and got beat by 30. I just don't think there's a team that thinks that on their home court, this team that we're playing is intimidating to us. I just don't think there's that.
All right, let's talk about the SEC here for a second, too, because it's controversial, however you want to say it. I think the bigger picture with LSU's win over Kentucky last night is LSU's for real. They got dudes. I mean, I was watching them this past weekend. They can play, and they could give somebody a hard time in March. If I'm somebody out there and I'm thinking LSU right now is looking kind of like 3-4 seed kind of in the NCAA tournament, who knows obviously what's going to go on between now and then, but that's a team that I think you don't necessarily want to play because they will wear you out.
Yeah, I say this all the time when I talk about LSU. They got dudes up front. Nas Reed's, you know, an athletic, crazy person. He's not crazy, but he's just crazy athletic. But the thing, the key to me has been Waters. Tremont Waters is about the team, and he wasn't. I thought maybe going into this year, I did three of their games last year. I thought maybe he was going to Trae Young it. You know what I mean by that? Like, become an offensive pig, shoot it too much, mm-hmm. not get people involved. And when I saw that Kentucky lost last night, because I only got a chance to really see the last minute or two, I thought, well, I wonder if Waters had a big game. I had 15 points, which is a big game, but he hasn't become that. You know, he's been a team guy. And so many times in basketball, the little guy wears your team out by over-dribbling, overshooting, and players don't know when they're getting the basketball. And Waters hasn't been that guy, and I think that's made all the difference in the world. I do. I think Will Wade's team is really good, really athletic, really tough, as you saw last night, talented. But I think Waters' leadership and not being a pig has been huge for that crew.
They've only lost one game. You guys go all the way back to they lost at Houston early on in the season, but you got to go way back to December when they lost that game at Houston before you can find it. They had the loss to Arkansas, real close game here a couple of weeks ago. But other than that, they just keep motoring along. And they beat a team in Kentucky, and we talked about it over the last couple of weeks, that have been playing as well as anybody in the country coming into that game.
They had.
And beat them on their home court.
Yeah, and beat them with a, like, there are some games. I remember this as a player at Indiana where it's a big game and the crowd's good. And then there are some games where it's a big game and the crowd's nuts. I thought last night it was a huge game and LSU stayed top. The one thing that people have said about LSU, and I do not think you can say this now, somebody, you know, they got a favorable schedule. They only play Tennessee once. They only play Kentucky once. That's fine. I mean, you can say all of that you want. But you know what they did, basically, in the last week? They beat Auburn, who's really good, and they beat Kentucky at Kentucky.
They won at Mississippi State.
At Mississippi State, right. So while they lost to Arkansas at home and people were poo-pooing what they were doing, look what they've bounced back and done at Mississippi State, Auburn at home, at Kentucky. My opinion, that tells you got leadership. That's strong. That's really strong.
As dangerous as Kentucky and Tennessee, maybe not. It's not really fair to compare them with Tennessee right now when you know coming into March, as Tennessee could be a one seed. But as dangerous as any of those teams coming out of the SEC as far as a team that you're going to face in March.
LSU, no question. I mean, unless something happens and they fold up shop, but there's absolutely no question about it. We always talk about athletic ability, shooting, and a point guard that can lead you, and I think they've got all that. I truly, because I thought Kentucky was playing really well, I expected Kentucky, a close game, Kentucky wins by 10 in the end. That's what I expected going in.
LSU was not quite ready for prime time just yet.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yep.
Now, the other thing I was thinking about, just to kind of encapsulate the rest of the country, because we talked about the Big Ten, ACC, we talked a little bit about the SEC. How good is Marquette? And, you know, I think the Big East is pretty deep because you've got teams like Butler who are kind of starting to show a little bit. And Butler saying, we're an NCAA tournament team. Don't forget about us. So the depth of the conference is starting to get to the point where you're going to get 5-6 teams into the NCAA tournament. But is Marquette a 2 seed? Or are they still kind of, if you look at them and you say, that's a 3, maybe even a 4 seed. Are they that good to where you can put them up there as a 2 seed as some of these others, like the Michigan team, start losing, Kentucky loses, some of these teams start hanging more L's onto their schedule.
You know, I think it's a story yet untold. Like, you know how first impressions get you, Chris? Like, my first impression, I watched Marquette go into Indiana. And Marcus Howard, I mean, I knew his dad, Chucky Howard, was running back at Indiana. And, all right, they get crushed. And I know Indiana at that time was pretty good, but I knew the Indiana wasn't a great team. And so that's my first impression. And then all of a sudden they start playing, and all of a sudden I watched them play last day or 30th, I think it was, of January. They came into Butler, and they killed Butler. Like, yeah. I think it was like an 18-point game, and you mentioned the game. They crushed them. And I'm thinking to myself, whoa, all right. Well, okay, they lose a game to St. John's. We talked to Wojo on this podcast the day after, and you could tell his disgust. So I always look for this, and I've already talked about how do you bounce back. You bounce back with a hell of a win over Villanova. Like, Chris, I mean, we talk about Kentucky was playing well. Villanova really got it straightened out as well. And now you back it up, Mark, or you go to DePaul. DePaul just had a big win, and you beat them 20. So my first impressions were, yeah, okay, good team. But, you know, Indiana crushes you. I watched that, and now it's totally different between Hauser, Theo John in the post, and obviously, you know, the kid Howard. I think you've got a great nucleus. The kid I'm looking at is Ed Morrow. Ed Morrow was going to be really good at Nebraska. I think he got hurt, end up transferring back to, not home, he's from Chicago, but I thought he was going to be a really good Big Ten player. He's starting to play better. He had six or eight last night. They're going to get good minutes out of him. He's a terrific, terrific post defender, both out on the floor and back. I like Marquette. One seed, nope. Two seed possible, be as high as it could go. 3-4 probable.
Yeah, and the Big East is kind of one of those teams that they could get five teams in, could even get six if Creighton makes a late season push. But could also be one of those that get maybe three or four.
Right.
Because you're going to have some teams that need to win some games. Butler, Creighton. Might even throw Georgetown in that mix that is looking at maybe getting in, but they need to win some games. St. John's, probably safe. Obviously, you're looking at Creighton.
Night.
I mean, you're looking at Villanova and you're looking at Marquette. But other than those three, is St. John's safe in your mind?
Oh, probably.
Terrible non-conference
schedule. Yeah, they didn't play anybody. They went the John Thompson senior route. I tell you what, big win last night. Man, it's so funny. You talk to coaches, Lavelle Jordan, the Butler coach. I talked to him today, Chris, and he can't say it, but he got screwed. But you know what? Those kind of calls, that's why everything is so big right now. Those kind of calls, man, that's the difference between Butler having a great, not a good, that's a great road win for Butler at a time when they've got to have a great road win. And I know close losses matter. I get all that. But you got a really good win, kind of certainly deserved overtime win for St. John's. Yeah, and look, Heron's back. He wasn't back for a little bit. Pons, everybody knows how good he is. I think St. John's being a tournament, but let me put it to you this way. Somebody's going to collapse. I'm just telling. Somebody is.
No, I know. In that conference, there's very little margin for error right now unless you're Villanova and Marquette. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Before we do, and we got some listener questions on the other end, we're going to pick some games on the other end as too. Let's get a word from Vivid Seats. And here's the situation with Vivid Seats. Don't settle for waiting in lines. How many times you wait in line to get in? I think about the days when we were students, and we would wait in line forever and ever to get into a game, and you had to stand sideways, you know, to see a game because the student section was so packed. Those days are over. Nobody wants to do that anymore. So now shop for tickets to every game with the official ticket partner of ESPN. That's Vivid Seats. At Vivid Seats, you can see your seats before you buy them, and they're backed by a 100% buyer guarantee, so it's safe, Doc.
Twice in my life, scalping's legal in Indiana. Twice in my life, I scalped tickets and they were fake. So I'm a big believer.
Sucker.
Yeah, that's me. Right, big L on my forehead. Hey, you may have to find another way to spend your time besides waiting in lines, but you'll be closer to the action than ever before. Head on over to Vivid Seats, the largest independent ticket marketplace around. Spend less time in the waiting room and more time in the great seats of your choice. Don't buy just any seat. Get a Vivid Seat, people.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, so let's take some listener questions. We threw it out there on Twitter, hashtag student section. We got a couple here. I'm going to try and pick through these. Okay, how about this one here from Dookie B? Should more plays be reviewable like basket interference, Doc? Or does that just slow the game down? Because we're trying our hardest not to slow the game down and get it in these two-hour windows. And if we review too many plays, we're going to be sitting there forever with the officials looking at monitors.
Chris, I don't think so. I don't think replay's been a great thing. I get the whole we want to get it right. I do. But I've talked to so many officials in every sport, and there's a back of your mind. There's, you know, hey, look, we can always go to replay, or you don't want to make the call. I just don't think it's done any good. I get what people are saying. You could go to the monitor if you're going to have it and go see, all right, hand went through the basket or something like that. But let's be honest, officiating is part of the game. Obviously, it hurt New Orleans. It was game-changing last night as well with Kentucky. But, you know, you're asking me, no, I don't think we should go to more replay.
All right, here's another one about that very specific question about the Duke game against Louisville. Why did the Cards have such a hard time defeating the 2-2-1 press? You know, Duke in the second half, Louisville completely fell apart, full court and half court. Why did they have such a hard time defeating them?
Well, what happened, I thought, in that game was Duke really extended their pressure, and while extending it, they moved everybody up, including the middle. Now, most times people say, hey, get the ball in the middle of the zone, look down, look shot, look opposite. Well, the middle wasn't available. And then what happened was, I think anyway, that Louisville started bleeding the clock for two reasons. One, because I think they got a little nervous on what was happening on the other side. And two, the length of Louisville. Now, look, the length of Duke. Jim Boeheim taught the zone to Mike Krzyzewski during all their USA basketball. Mike Krzyzewski did what Jim Boeheim does, recruit long athletes. And I really thought this. I really and truly thought the length up front and the pressure up front on the basketball affected the game. How do you beat it? I was screaming at the television. What you do is, as you get to half court, you have somebody open on a wing. Either wing, doesn't matter. And you just simply whip the ball around. Mm-hmm. You move the ball around. Why? So you're moving the defense. The moving of a defense makes a defense get in trouble. It puts a defense where it's going to screw up. They never did that. They dribbled the ball down, matched up two guys on top. You swing the ball around. You get somebody in the opposite corner from where you want to shot. I mean, from where you whip the ball. So if I start the ball on the right side, I want a guy in the left-hand corner. I whip it around. Defense has to move. I'm going to get a shot in the corner, and I always have a post guy ball side. Louisville completely got away from any of that, started matching up against Duke, and they had no chance to get past him, no chance to create a two-on-one situation and kick it to the next guy. Just couldn't have been done.
All right, you talked about it earlier, how 18-year-old kids, you just never know what you're right. going to get night in and night up when these kids show up. This question from Andy Barton kind of is along those same lines. We talked about the kids, but here he wants to know what's going through a coach's mind when a team comes from 23 down with 10 to go and your players have that shell-shocked look in their eyes. You know when you call a timeout, and Chris Mack, we talked about it earlier, called a lot of timeouts earlier to try and stem the tide, and he's looking at his kids, and what's going through his mind? How do I get through to these kids?
How do I set something up to get us a bucket goes through his mind. I'm telling you, because look, you got to play defense. Your defense is set, but you got to come up with something in your own mind to get us a bucket. That's one. Two, you got to figure out, okay, who can I lean on right here? Who can calm us down? And I'm going to talk to that person in the timeout. Third thing, and these are all, there's no one, two, or three. It's one, 1A, 1B. They're all the same. Third thing, where can I go to get fouled? Everything in basketball seems to be on the perimeter, but the great elixir is throwing the ball onto the block and having a guy to get fouled. Now, let's talk about the players. I gotta find a guy that I can reach. If everybody's shook, I don't want to scream at an already shook guy. So I see a guy, look in their eyes, that I can reach, and I talk to the team through that guy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Chris, look, all we gotta do is settle down, throw the ball around, Dan, Gabe, you get in the post. We're just going to take the ball. Hey, relax. We still got a lead. We've still been better than them. But you're talking as you're looking to the guy who's calm, like you're talking to him, but you're really talking to the team. And then you say, look, we got whatever was on the court. We got three fifth-year seniors. You've been in this situation. Now let's make damn sure, make or miss, we get what we want out of this timeout. You know, we get what we just drew up. We get fouled. We get a shot. And then the other thing, I swear to God, and this is something Coach Knight always said at the end of the huddle, in a pressure situation against Kentucky when they were trapping with Pitino, don't forget, pass fake before you dribble. Don't catch the ball and dribble it. So the last thing you want, if everything else goes crazy, against pressure, against the zone, pass fake it before you dribble. If they can just remember that, chances are you're going to get pretty good offense. But you want to talk to the guy who seems the calmest and use him to talk to the rest of the team.
Did you just throw Gabe in there, our producer,
on the
post?
Yeah, Gabe's
going to
be a ball handler. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We might have to call back-to-back timeouts after that one.
Yeah, we don't have enough timeouts. There's not enough.
All right.
We probably don't have a bag big enough to buy Gabe. You know what I mean?
That's true, yeah. He probably doesn't play for us to begin with.
No, we got to get shoe contracts. We got to get Adidas involved. You know what I'm saying.
All right, we're going to make some picks on the other side. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Okay, Coach, let's make some picks here, Doc. Let's start with Maryland and Michigan. Maryland, a quintessential Big Ten team right now. They fall at Wisconsin. That was the third loss in four games. Then they bounce back with a win at Nebraska. And then they beat Purdue the other night, so they're playing well.
Down 8 against Purdue, win by 14. Crazy. Number one team in the league goes down. I'm going to take Michigan, but only because they're at home. I just think Michigan at home in this particular year, it's one of the first years they've ever sold out every game. I think they're better offensively at home. I would expect Izzy Brazdeikis to have a bigger game. But if this were at Maryland, I think I'd take Maryland. I think Maryland's playing better. But give me Michigan just because it's noon and it's on Saturday morning.
All right, speaking of Saturday, over on ESPN2 at 4 o'clock Eastern, Iowa State and K-State. This is a big one in the Big 12. K-State, ever since Dean Wade got back, Coach, he's been great. Only that loss to Texas A&M and a string of wins.
I want to love Iowa State. Then they go ahead and lose at home. Dean Wade, when you talk to Bruce Weber, is like his favorite guy not named, I don't know. D Brown, let's put it that way. He loved D Brown. I'm taking Kansas State because I don't trust Iowa State. I think Iowa State's a better team. I think they got better players, but I don't trust them nearly as much as I trust Bruce Weber and Kansas State. So I'm going to take Kansas State. I'm going with home teams.
Yeah, if you can't trust Iowa State at home, when can you trust them?
Right.
But Diarra might be out for that game, though, I think, for K-State. So keep an eye on that situation. All right, Tennessee, number one in the country, Kentucky, Saturday, prime time, 8 o'clock.
You know, you kind of want to say this Kentucky team isn't going to lose two in a row at home, but I'm going to say they are. Until further notice, give me Admiral Schofield, give me Grant Williams, give me guys that, here's what I like, Chris, they got a swagger to them. You know, they've already had a little thing, whoever started, I don't care, with Penny Hardaway at Memphis. They already had a thing at Florida with the Gator Chop. Veteran guys, Bone's a good shooter, tough guys up front, mean guys, experienced guys, with an edge. If you're ever going to win in Rupp, that's the kind of team you win with in Rupp. I think it's going to be the second loss for the Cats.
Well, in a row, too, at home, so you're picking Tennessee. Finally, Virginia and Virginia Tech. I don't know what to make of Virginia Tech without Justin Robinson at that point guard spot right now. Buzz Williams has got to figure that out in a hurry.
Yeah, he does. Justin Robinson's a really good player in a lot of ways. One of them is steadying a team. Look, kind of the same thing. You know, Virginia had this gauntlet, right? I mean, even though it was a home game, it was Duke. Come right back and play North Carolina, get down to Carolina in the second half, end up winning the game. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm not picking against Virginia until maybe the tournament at Duke, I suppose. You're right. Justin Robinson's out. There'll be a great crowd. Was it Hassel Coliseum? That's all great. But again, you're talking about experience. Ty Jerome, Hunter, Jack Salt's been there for 100 years. Obviously, Kyle Guy. I think they came through that. You needed to split the Duke North Carolina. They did. I think this Saturday night they'll be ready to go.
Yeah, Virginia Tech likes to shoot threes, even though offensively they haven't had any identity without Robinson. And what does Virginia do? They defend the perimeter as well as anybody. So that's going to be a tough task for Virginia Tech. They do get them at home. That's Monday night at 7 o'clock on ESPN. Want to thank our sponsor for today, Vivid Seats. Appreciate all the help in bringing you the Courtside Podcast. Reminding everybody here to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts. Doc, safe travels, my man. I will see you next week.
Hopefully we have Seth back and we have a rock fight, Connor. Thank you, Gabe. Thank you, Chris.
All right, brother. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.